least favorites.
One of your least favorites, really?
Yeah.
Fantasia? I love Fantasia. Yeah. I think it's fun. Musical Hard Day's Night from 1964.
Uh-oh.
Starred which famous British rock band? Was it The Who, The Beatles,
Beatles,
The Kinks, or Austin Powers?
The Beatles.
It was The Beatles, correct.
I know that one.
1964, Mary Poppins received a total of 13 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture, a record for any other film released by Walt Disney Studios. How many did it actually win? Did it win one? Did it win three? Did it win five? Or did it win 12 of the 13?
Five?
That is correct.
That was a guess.
That is correct.
I knew Julie Andrews won.
She did. She won Best Actress. That is correct. Oliver in 1968 was based on this Shakespearean play. Was it Twelfth Night, The Taming of the Shrew, Oliver Twist, or Oliver Wendell Holmes?
Oliver Twist?
That is correct.
Oliver Twist isn't Shakespearean.
That is correct.
It is Dickens.
That is correct. That is correct, too. An extra point for you there. In 1978, I did write the quiz while I was drinking last night. This Grease director in 1978 also made The Blue Lagoon and Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. Was it Richard Arnold, Mandy Moore, Samuel Lincoln, or Randall Kleiser?
Randall Kleiser.
That is correct. You are on fire. You are 6 for 5. Yeah, I'll give you the bonus point. 6 for 5. In the Muppet movie from 1979, who is the villain who tries to kill Kermit and his friends? Is it Tommy and Lindsay? Is it Doc Hopper? Is it Charlotte? Or is it Kristen?
I think it's Kristen, isn't it?
No, it is Doc Hopper.
I haven't seen the Muppet movie in years. Derek's looking at me.
Doc Hopper,
I haven't seen it in years.
Plays by the wonderful Charles Durning.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The Blues Brothers, 1980, has a cameo from this famous director. Is it Steven Spielberg? Is it George Lucas? Is it Martin Scorsese? Or is it Carrie Fisher? This Blues Brothers, in the Blues Brothers, there's a cameo from this famous director.
Well, Carrie Fisher's in the movie anyway, so it's not her.
Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, or Martin Scorsese?
Lucas.
That is incorrect. Steven Spielberg.
Who is it? Spielberg. Okay.
He is at the very end when the SWAT team comes
in.
Purple Rain, 1984, starred
never
Prince.
Seen it.
Who was the famous singer girlfriend? Who was Prince's famous singer girlfriend in the movie Purple Rain? Was it Sheena Easton, Sheila E. Vanity, or Apollonia?
Sheila E.
That is incorrect. It's Apollonia.
All right. Never seen it.
We have two more and then the two bonuses. Who directed The Commitments, 1991? Was it Alan Parker, Alan Alda, Alan Arkin, or Woody Allen?
Woody Allen.
Incorrect. Alan Parker.
Never seen that either.
Who was the young actor who tried out for the lead role in Moulin Rouge? Was it Leonardo DiCaprio, Jake Gyllenhaal, Heath Ledger, or all of the above?
All of the above.
That is correct.
Yeah, because that came out, what, 2001?
Yes, and you have two bonus questions. Name the star of The School of Rock.
Jack Black. I was in that movie, too, as an extra
nice.
In the end.
Correct. And yes. In the film La La Land, what is Hollywood also known as?
La La Land.
That is correct. You are
that
a winner.
That would have been really bad if I got that one wrong.
You have won yourself a copy of Rise of the Planet of the Apes
nice.
With James Franco before everybody hated him. Enjoy that. And thank you for coming to watch this, Molly. It was a great time.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up next is The Big Picture with Derek and Shay. Stick around. It's WMFO, Medford, Massachusetts.
Tempo, Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. I'm on Aux 1, not Aux 2. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Write those numbers down. Punch them into your phone. Memorize them. Eat the paper that they're written on. Give us a call. We love to hear from our listeners. And coming up later tonight, you're good. Coming up later tonight, what? You're on mic 3.
No. Oh, yes, I am. You're correct.
You have to actually make noise into the thing for it to do the thing.
I did a...
That's not noise. No.
Sorry, listeners. We all have heat stroke right now from the past 3 days of living in Boston, Massachusetts.
Well, we're in a nice air-conditioned studio, so we got that going
for us. This is the coolest I've been in days.
It's beautiful outside.
Yes.
You can't argue with what's happening outside.
Well, that's like even I bartended all day on Sunday, and the other bartender and myself kept getting like 25, 30% tips. And we were like, I mean, we're good at this, but why is this happening?
Yeah.
And then one customer finally said, we can all tell that the two of you are slowly dying. I was like, oh, that's kind of what we thought.
These tips are so you can go buy an air conditioner on your way home and hopefully not die.
This is so you can be found dead with this money and your family can afford your heat stroke funeral.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I'm
thoughtful of your customers to do that.
Everybody's always looking out for their fellow man, you know?
Yeah. But it has been nice. It's like...
Today I took a 3-mile walk just for the sake of doing it. Like, that's how nice it was out today. Today is our first day of spring, in my opinion, despite the fact that it's been spring for, what, almost 3 months?
Well, we had the spring
like
back
by
in...
by the technical term.
We had February spring, and then winter came back and hung around way too long.
And then summer was like, yo, what up? And then it went back to being sort of wintry. And then now, today, it was like, oh, this is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. So,
here
we go. Coming up later tonight, Monsanto is being sued.
Tis.
To the shock of nobody. We'll talk about why it's being sued, why this story has sort of been bubbling under the big stories, most of which seem to involve Donald Trump and Twitter and Russians, as usual. But the Monsanto thing is interesting and maybe something that you want to apply in your everyday life.
And so. I was going to say, and kind of implicative, is that the word?
Yes.
Implicative, that's a tongue twister, implicative of other things, other products, other things that you're like, oh, this seems weird, but nothing bad has happened yet. This is kind of eye-opening to that.
Yeah, you may think twice about using this product in your home is what it's coming down, but
precisely,
we'll have a reasoned approach to this. I also need to point out that for some reason, Chris Earle's guest tonight has the same last name as I do. I don't
weird,
know.
Weird, right?
Yeah. I don't know how that
it's
happens.
It's almost like she's married to you or something.
And it's almost like she won't leave and she's still in the studio.
she's pointing at her wedding band right now.
So, my wife is in the studio.
Get it, Molly?
Which means...
I like her better than I like Derek. So this
everyone likes her better than they like me.
She's nicer than you.
We should just let her host the show. Maybe we'll let her join us for Did You Hear?
I am in support of that.
Benevolent. But you have to sit quietly and don't give me that look. I'm on the air.
Look was awesome, by the way, guys. She just gave him. Oh, my goodness.
This is why I can't have my wife in the studio. This is why I can't have my wife in the studio is because I get that look. What do we got going on?
Well deserved.
Chase Spillane.
Well, in local news, a 16-year-old girl has been arrested following an investigation into a threatening note found in a bathroom at a high school in Taunton. Taunton police announced the arrest this afternoon, days after a Taunton High School employee found the threatening note and reported it to administrators. The note was directed at Taunton High School and mentioned yesterday's date, which resulted in school being canceled for the day for both students and faculty for both the high school and the nearby Parker Middle School. The schools reopened today, which, of course, was the same day that the teen suspect was arrested without incident. It's becoming
this is one of several that has happened in the last few days.
I was saying the last like 48 hours.
There's one going on right now at Lynn English where they're going to have police at the school for the next 2 days because somebody made a threat. There was another school in Massachusetts that was shut down late last week. It was shut down earlier this week out in Western Massachusetts. So... you know, I know it's springtime. I know it's nice out, kids, but You don't threaten to blow up or shoot up the school. That's not how you get a day off.
This is when you go and lose your virginity. This is not when you go and try to threaten your classmates.
Yeah. But this, you know, coming on the heels of what happened in Santa Fe.
I was saying, of my national story.
Which we will talk about shortly. And coming on the heels of Parkland and everything else that's going on. There is also, because we've been hearing about these school closings periodically. Mm-hmm. Apparently there was a hacker group over in Europe that was running a contest amongst themselves to see how many schools they could shut down by making anonymous threats against the schools.
How cute.
And some of those...
What a good use of your technological intellect.
Yeah, and some of those came over here into the Massachusetts area. So I can't imagine what these kids are going through. You know, it's like you're trying to get through the school year. You're trying to get through finals. You're trying to get to summer. You're trying to graduate. You're dealing with prom and all of the pressure that prom puts on you. And every other day, there's another school threat.
Well, and don't get me wrong. I don't want this to be taken incorrectly. It's not trivial at all what is happening in these kids' lives. What is, anytime this happens, it is, I know, not trivial. But it's gotten to the point where it almost feels like the Scream movies, where you watch, like, Sidney Prescott is just trying to, like, have a boyfriend and go to parties and be a person. And, oh, but there's this guy with a weird mask that just keeps trying to kill her.
But I think the problem in this and the danger in this is that everybody who's talking about it, including Shay Spillane and myself, are adults. We're removed from this. Mm-hmm. We live in our own bubble of safety that we construct around ourselves. And as adults, we are in control of our lives. We are in control of where we go and where we have to be and things like that. We don't necessarily remember what it's like to be 15, 16 years old and freaked out about everything and to have no control over where you're supposed to be.
But see, the difference being, and I'm not trying to age you, Derek, but I was in middle school when Columbine happened. Like, we stopped French class so that we could watch the footage of it. This has been a part of my life for all of my adolescence. So it's, even though I'm not, obviously, I'm not 15 anymore, even though I look at, but even though I'm not 15 anymore, I still absolutely, I can identify with the feeling of every time. I mean, there were even two kids expelled in eighth grade for under suspicion of something like that happening in my middle school. And it's one of those things, it's like, it's always, the entire time I was in high school, it was always there. And what's strange, though, is that I thought about this the other day. It was only there when I was at public school events, because I went to, this is not me trying to say something snobby, this is me just generally basing this on research. I noted that most high school shootings that have occurred have been at large public schools with over 1,000 students. And like I said, I went to one of the five middle schools in my generally major city in Massachusetts. Two kids got expelled for even the threat of something like that happening. And it was a very real thing. It was a very real, a bunch of us got questioned. It was this big thing. And then I went to an all-girls private school in a town in the suburbs. It was like something like that never existed.
Yeah.
It's not an occurrence that you would even imagine happening.
We've brought this up before, and there is something rather startling and stark about the fact that all of these shootings are happening in public schools.
Yep, and in large public schools.
But I'm sure if we go back through the history of it, we'll find some smaller ones. I mean, Santa Fe, not a big school. Not a big town.
But not a big school compared to other schools in Texas.
Right.
If you think about, there are schools in Nebraska that it's like a regional high school of, I don't know, 30 towns, and they still only have 700 students. This is, we're talking, Santa Fe is, I don't know, 2 hours outside of Houston. And that's essentially, for Texas standards, that's a suburb.
Yep.
That's not some middle of nowhere place. And they had, I believe it was 1,200 students. And there's something to be said for the fact, and I'm in no way, I might as well just tell my national story now since we're already going into it. But
In national news,
the father of the teenager who's accused of killing 10 people at Santa Fe High School in Texas says his son was, quote unquote, a good boy. and he believes bullying drove him to perpetrate last week's deadly rampage. I dated a Greek guy for 3 years. I have trouble pronouncing Greek names.
Yeah, this one's rough.
Antonios Pagordis claims during a brief phone interview Monday with the Wall Street Journal, his son, 17-year-old Dimitrios, is on suicide watch at Galveston County Jail, where he's being held without bail. Did not mean for that to rhyme. He has not entered a plea to the charges of capital murder on multiple people and aggravated assault on a public servant. But in a probable cause statement, the authorities said he admitted to the shooting.
Yeah.
But my point being that it's, and I'm in no way defending this guy. I the past 3 days, I've quoted you, Derek, saying, if you want to commit a mass shooting, the first step is to test the gun on yourself.
Yes, please. Make sure it works.
Point it at
your head, pull the trigger.
Perhaps the most apt thing. It's like, okay, you want to commit suicide, then commit suicide. You don't have to take people who want to stay alive down with you.
Well, Dimitrios here didn't have the courage to go through with the suicide part of it.
And that's the worst part, is that it's like, okay, so you could just kill a bunch of people. And that's not the worst part. Everything about it is the worst part. But I guess the most frustrating part for me is that he has the guts to kill innocent people. To some of the things, the interviews with the kids who were like hiding in a closet, who were barricading themselves, and two of the kids that were barricaded in the closet died.
Yeah.
With the other kids in there with them.
Yeah.
And he was saying taunting things to them, and then to have the gall to be able to do that and then not be able to finish the job. I mean, that's the one amount of respect that I will ever have for Dylan Klebold and Justin Harris, is that at least they killed themselves afterwards. Like, at least, not that I don't want people like that to be brought to justice, but I also, it's almost more disgusting that someone is capable of killing so many other people, but then when it comes down to killing themselves, it's like, oh no, that's too hard.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's too much for me.
And
like, are you kidding me, Dan?
And of course, everybody's dragging the dad in this, but look, the dad has to say this, because the dad is going to be subject to at least a dozen civil suits, probably
especially
criminal investigation.
It was his gun.
Yeah, because they were his guns.
Yeah.
And the question comes up, how did the kid get the guns? Well, look.
It's Texas.
You can have, let me tell you something.
Like, that was my first reaction when my mom said that. It's like, how did he have access to these guns? I was like, Mom, it's Texas.
Yeah. Here's,
they were probably on the coffee table.
Before you start beating up on the dad too much, you can put those guns under lock and key, encase them in concrete, and bury them in the backyard under more concrete, and a determined 17-year-old is going to find a way to get them.
And I mean,
That's where the dad gets a little bit of breathing room in this, because anyone who has been a teenager or has been around teenagers knows that teenagers are some of the wiliest creatures on the planet.
Well, and the thing is, too, you have to consider the fact that, like, okay, when my brother and I were in high school, my mom purposely didn't keep booze in the house because she knew that we would steal it.
Right. That's called parenting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it stands to reason. Okay, well, so you have a somewhat, yeah, he's a good boy. You must have noticed something about him that was a little off. You must have noticed he was going through something.
You might have noticed that he's making bombs.
Right? You might have noticed,
or
like,
things
what
that look like bombs.
What's that giant heavy bag you're carrying up to your room?
Yeah.
Dimitrios?
Like, what are you doing in the trailer? Why are you in the trailer all the time? You know, parents, particularly parents of teenage boys, get to this point where they sort of distance themselves from the teenage boys and don't pay as much attention to what they're doing, because they don't want to walk in on the kid masturbating. And they more or less assume, oh, the kid's off somewhere by himself. I don't want to interrupt anything. I don't want to body shame him.
But that's the thing, is that that's one of, I don't know, 49 things he could be doing if he's off by himself with the door locked.
But here's a kid with no criminal record, no discipline record, football player. Apparently, one of these kids had kept to himself, didn't really engage with anybody else. The only sort of telltale signs that something was going to go wrong showed up on Facebook when he posted the Born to Kill t-shirt that he bought.
Yeah, that was cute.
And the fact that he's wearing a trench coat all the time. And at what point do you intervene? At what point? This isn't a case like Parkland, where the FBI had been called and somehow could not locate a 19-year-old and never interviewed him because they couldn't find, because 19-year-olds can now outwit the FBI. There were no warning signs here that were missed other than the fact that he's a weird kid and he likes to wear a trench coat all the time. Well, you're in comedy, Shay. You know Zach.
I know. I was saying, I know multiple people.
I'm not giving out any last names here. You know Zach.
All you have to say is Zach.
He's a weird kid. What do you do with that? You know, at what point do you have the right to intervene and say, hey, what's going on here? Are you going to shoot some people?
It's a matter of...
And how are you going to kick a kid out of school because he wears a trench coat?
Well, it's a matter of... See, that's the troubling thing about the situation is that in any situation, even if it's not a school shooting with a kid who's troubled in high school, is a lot of times it takes something going too far to recognize that there's a problem. Like, when I was in high school, it was like my mom recognized that, like, things were different with me, but it took me almost getting arrested for her to be like, oh, something is actually terribly wrong here.
Yeah.
And I think, and I'm not defending this kid or his father, but at the same time, I do understand where you're coming from, where it's a matter of, like, when is the moment that you say something is really, really wrong here? And typically the moment when you decide that that's what's going to happen is... a moment when it's blatantly gone too far is when it just kind of slaps you in the face with, okay, that problem that I very slightly suspected but didn't want to believe was true is absolutely there.
Yeah.
And that's honestly, what I find so interesting about this case is the fact that even though it makes me so angry that after being capable of killing and injuring so many people, he couldn't even do what he should have done in the first place if he wanted to do something like this, which is just commit suicide. And I never...
Test the gun on yourself first.
Like, I never say it's a good idea to commit suicide, but at the same time, if it's between that or killing a bunch of people and then killing yourself, option A every time. This is one of those unique situations where it's going to be interesting... just for them, and I mean, we'll probably never know truly what happens, but that...
he's alive. We'll figure it out.
But I mean, in this situation, this father is able to speak to his son. They're gonna have a powwow.
Yeah.
There's going to be some sort of interaction between them where this is all going to have to make some sort of sense, even if it's just for the two of them to know, and that's an amazing concept in terms of the other times this has happened, because usually we don't even get a trial. We get either the person's in a mental institution or the person died right before the police got him.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not Texas tries to pursue the death penalty in this case.
That's the other
because
thing is that Texas like that,
they love them some capital murder down there.
Element to it. Well, and I always think of, you know, my favorite my favorite mass murderer, my favorite case in terms of a mass shooting is Charles Whitman from Texas, from the UT Tower shootings, where he, in his suicide note, he left a note, like, he knew they were going to kill him.
Yeah.
But he left a note saying, please do an autopsy on my brain because there's something going on in here that is not right. Like, I'm a normal guy and suddenly I feel this way.
Yeah.
And then they did an autopsy on his brain and there was a tumor pressing on his amygdala, which is the part of your brain that controls extreme emotions, whether it be love, hate, anger, violence, what have you. And I think that that's something that I think that's maybe that's the root of how we're ever going to figure out why this, we've had 288 school shootings since 2008. 288. Other countries, I think the highest one behind us is nine compared to 288. Yeah,
but we've got one of the largest populations on the planet.
Still, I mean, but we have one of the largest populations on the planet. What's China's number?
China, they
What's
don't.
What's Russia's number?
China's a different thing.
But that's my point.
China's a very different thing.
Russia's a different thing. China, I'm not saying their governments are better than ours, but I'm saying that obviously there's something that's going wrong if we're having this high an occurrence of these things when other countries, it's nearly unheard of.
China, it's not unheard of in China, but what happens in China is they use knives and swords. There are regular incidents of people going into schools and stabbing their classmates or hacking up their classmates or setting fire to their classmates or throwing acid on their classmates.
Oh, China is way more badass than we are.
The difference in China is people, by and large, are too busy being afraid of the government to sort of take anything out on each other.
I was using China as a blanket example. Yeah. I didn't mean to, I'm saying, regardless of whether our population is that much bigger, it's still, even if we did it by ratio with other developed, not scared of their government countries, it would, the difference would still be vast.
Yeah, well, I mean, the gun ownership definitely plays into that, but the other thing that plays into it is, and we've brought this up in the past, is what a wonderful soft target our schools are. Especially out in the suburbs. They don't want to put in metal detectors. They don't want to restrict the entrances that students can use. And here's a bit of reality. Even if you do that, okay, even if you harden the schools, all that's going to do is convince the school shooter to wait outside. And then when the bell rings, he's going to sit there and pick people off as they walk out the door.
Well, that's even my mother, as I think our listeners and I know you know, is a school nurse at an elementary school, a public elementary school. And they were speaking the other day about how the official thing you're supposed to do is lockdown. So you lock all the doors, you barricade the door, you hide. But a couple of schools across the country are now implementing a rule where if there is an intruder and you are the adults in the situation, you should try to fend them off. And my mom's like, and I was thinking about this. I looked at her, I said, Mom, do you know military level self-defense and ways to disarm somebody with an automatic weapon? She said, no. I said, lock the door and barricade it with your desk and then hide under your desk.
Yeah.
Like, do not try to take this person down.
Yep.
There's a reason that there's a saying, he brought a gun to a knife fight.
We could train our teachers in how to do that, though.
That is true.
That could be part of the training.
But I think that we just fought to keep, like, music class open.
Yeah.
I don't really know that there's money in the budget.
By the way,
teach all of our teachers in the entire country to...
In case you're wondering, and I know I was, where was David Hogg while all of the coverage of Santa Fe was going on? Because isn't he our national youth spokesperson on gun violence now? Hey. David Hogg was on Twitter, and his take was telling the media not to use Dimitrios Pergortsis' name or image. That's what he said. Don't use his name. Don't use his image. Let's not reward them with attention.
I would say that is largely, I mean, that's every time this happens, even if you go back to, I can't even remember his name because how many have happened, the Dark Knight shooter, Holmes.
Yeah, James Holmes.
James Holmes. I always want to say John, but that's the porn star.
Yeah.
But James Holmes, you go back to him and it was, that's the same thing, is that, I remember when we were discussing that was what, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And the big emphasis was stop saying the killer's name. Talk about the victims. Talk about the victims. Talk about the victims. But I barely remembered his last name just now. You know what I mean?
It's like called news. Who, what, where, why, when.
I have
That's
no
what we're
idea
here for.
What any of the victims' names are.
David Hogg also is encouraging college seniors to spray paint their caps orange as a way to show solidarity with shooting victims. I told you. And notice, David Hogg has not been on any of the networks lately. I told you a few weeks ago when he went after the mutual fund companies that his 15 minutes were over. And sure enough, he is now relegated to a Twitter sideshow. So, sorry, David Hogg.
Wah, wah.
They'll retire him for a couple of years and then bring him back out again.
Yeah, he'll find something to make himself relevant again.
In world news, Canada.
Canada.
A foreign country.
There's never anything about Canada.
Canada, a frequent critic of U.S. immigration policy, is doing everything it can to stem the flow of immigrants. A report by Reuters revealed that Canada is rejecting a greater number of refugee claims from those who cross its border illegally, allowing only 40% of border crossers to stay during the first 3 months of 2018, down from 53% in 2017. Haitians had the lowest approval rate at just 9%, followed by Nigerians at 33.5%. Canada even sent an envoy to Nigeria to ask the country to stop sending people and has asked the United States to stop issuing visas to people who might seek asylum in Canada. Oh, Canada. This is the same Canada that sits around and says, oh, my God, your immigration policies are barbaric and they're horrible. And then what
and
do
I'm
they
like,
get?
Can you please use your barbaric immigration policies to keep us from getting any immigrants? That'd be great.
They've
thanks.
Had 20,000, about 27,000 people have tried to cross the border into Canada illegally, and they're freaked out up there. We have 1 million a year trying to get into the United States.
Yeah, but ours cook better.
Yeah. but this is it.
Shay loves enchiladas.
Do as I say, not as I do. This is a bad look for Canada.
Yeah, this is the like maybe the first time Canada has done something controversial in ever.
This has been going on very quietly.
Well, of course, it's Canada. They like to just speak very politely and softly while they do the conniving thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's just like Donald Trump in the White House and the NAFTA negotiations, there's been a lot of stuff that's come out about Canada playing fast and loose and in some cases self-servedly, selfishly with timber exports and with milk exports and with maple syrup exports. And these are things that never make the headlines.
Because they're way too cute of exports.
But the Canadians...
You're not going to yell at Canada for like, oh my God, you gave us too much maple syrup. But our pancakes taste too good.
But that's what they're doing. It's not that they gave us... It's not the pancakes taste too good. It's that the syrup farmers up in Vermont are losing their shirts because Canada is dumping maple syrup on the market and driving the price down.
There's an image.
It is state-sponsored. Canada gives money to its maple syrup farmers. Maple syrup farmers in the United States do not get subsidies, so they can afford to sell it for less to the United States. And the maple syrup farmers up in Vermont are like, wait a minute, what are these Canadians doing? So they come off as being this nice, servile, friendly people. The reality is the Canadians are like, hang on a second. We're looking out for number one, and number one has a maple leaf behind it.
Well, it's just like, I always mess up which president this was. I believe it was either FDR or Woodrow Wilson that said, speak softly but carry a big stick.
Yes.
Was it FDR? Or maybe it was Teddy.
It was Teddy, I believe.
Yeah. But speak softly and carry a big stick. Canada, definition of that. They're all just like, we're so cute and nice and like we're so non-threatening, yeah, but don't mess with us.
Yeah, until something happens that we don't like, then the claws come out and it's like, yeah, Canada. So, yeah, bad look, Mr. Trudeau.
Oh,
bad look, Canada.
Canada.
Take your immigrants. Take your Haitians. The other side of this is, once again, nobody wants the Haitians.
Hey, I'm part Canadian. I can't really comment on much of this.
Haiti doesn't want the Haitians. The United States doesn't want the Haitians. Canada doesn't want the Haitians. Nobody wants the Haitians.
Let's just build them a new island.
Yeah, they've got an island. It's been rebuilt.
Yeah, but it's kind of a terrible one.
Yeah, well,
keeps having earthquakes and other stuff.
It's pretty much a lot of that's done now.
Can you imagine if that's the way that we lived in America? Well, it's like, oh, well, people keep looting each other and the earth keeps shaking and they're keeping all these tsunamis. But it's like mostly over.
It's been rebuilt. the earthquake situation has been rebuilt. Yes, it's the Caribbean. You're going to get hurricanes. That's why do you live there? Don't live where the hurricanes are. Right?
We live where the blizzards are.
Yeah, but the blizzards come and then they melt and they blow some trees down. They don't devastate the landscape the same way that the hurricanes do. Look at Puerto Rico. They're still trying to fix that mess. In sports news, hedge fund manager David Tepper is the newest member of America's ultra elite, the owner of an NFL team. Tepper paid a record $2.2 billion for the Carolina Panthers, whose previous owner, Jerry Richardson, put the team on the market following numerous allegations of sexual harassment. In his first statement to the press, Tepper said that Charlotte may not be the permanent home of the Panthers, telling reporters, quote, "This team has to have some kind of presence in the Carolinas, and the last time I saw how many are there, that's right, there's two of them," end quote. Tepper called Charlotte a logical place for the Panthers, but is clearly hedging his bets to get a new stadium. The team's lease on Bank of America Stadium ends after the coming season.
It's so weird. I never think about that. You know, where it's just like, oh, like, this is just like renting an apartment. It's, you know, everything's negotiable.
You know how old that stadium is?
Older than me?
22 years old.
Oh, so way younger than me?
Barely old enough to drink. I think it's newer than Gillette.
That's saying something.
If my memory serves me right. Gillette, well, I believe, is 23 years old.
Gillette? No. Oh, now I'm curious. Because I remember when it changed from... Because what was it called before it was Gillette? It was just called like Foxborough Stadium.
Well, no. The old Shea Stadium... It used to be called Shea Stadium, actually. The old Shea Stadium had been there since the 1960s, and it's had about a 40-year lifespan. Gillette is newer than that. Gillette is like 1999, 2000.
I was going to say, it's around the time I entered high school.
They're right around the same age. And nobody around here is sitting around going, oh, we got to tear down Gillette and build a new stadium. It's 22 years old. But here's what's...
It was called Foxborough Stadium beforehand.
Here's what's happened. Well, it was Sullivan Stadium, and it was Shea Stadium. It was... It wasn't Shea Stadium. Shea Stadium was the Mets. It was Schaefer, Stadium for a little while.
My name is Shea. You think, yeah. I don't know.
It was Schaefer Stadium for a while. It was Sullivan Stadium, and then it was Foxborough Stadium after the Sullivans sold it. Because the Sullivans were the ones that originally built it. And when they sold the team, it just became Foxborough Stadium, and then they built the new one.
It is surprisingly difficult to...
22 years.
To find when it actually opened.
22 years. That's a new stadium.
Yeah, that is a brand new stadium. I mean, and you think about Fenway, we all just fought to the teeth to not have Fenway closed.
Right.
And Fenway opened, what, in 1901?
But there's this arms race going on ever since Jerry Jones built Jerry World down in Texas. Everybody's trying to get a new stadium. Atlanta's got the new stadium, affectionately known as Megatron's Butthole because of its retractable roof that looks a little bit like a mechanical anus opening and closing. The Vikings got their new stadium. So all these teams now are like, oh, we got to have a new stadium. The Giants and the Jets are playing in a new stadium. And it's like, if you're playing in a place that's 50, 60, 70 years old, isn't up to modern standards, fine. Go ahead. Build a new stadium. 22 years?
Yeah, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
These things cost billions of dollars.
I would say it was 2002, by the way, that Gillette opened.
Okay, like, 2002.
Gillette.
So that's a 16-year-old stadium. I guess we got to start asking for a new one.
Right? But I remember I was in college when the Yankees were building a new Yankee Stadium. And even that, I had been to the old Yankee Stadium. It was fine.
Yeah.
Like, there was nothing wrong with it. It was structurally sound. It was built, you know, it was planned properly. There was nothing wrong with it. Other than that, they just wanted it to be fancier.
No, they couldn't run their personal seat license scam at the old one because nobody was going to pony up for that. And it didn't have enough luxury boxes. And it didn't have enough ways to keep the millionaires who pay for the personal seat licenses and the seats behind home plate away from the Poe who were up in the bleachers.
Well, guess what? The year they broke ground was the year that we came back from 0-3, to beat them in the playoffs and win the World Series. So...
Here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the NFL focus on the quality of the product on the field and on making tickets affordable for the fans.
Yeah.
Rather than on...
Look into what's in the hot dogs before you look into rebuilding a stadium.
Rather than on building new stadiums for the 1%.
Yeah. I don't even really like football, and I can hop on that.
Okay. You know.
I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that on
the
show.
We don't like any blasphemy on this station or on this show.
Take me out to the ball game.
The football game? Absolutely.
No, the fun one.
Brady and Gronk are going to be at the mandatory mini camp in June. By
only
the way.
Reason I watch football.
Big news right there.
Two names you just said. Actually, the second one more. In entertainment news, Barack and Michelle Obama have signed a multi-year deal to produce television shows and films for Netflix, which was announced on Monday by the streaming service. And they will be, quote, potentially including scripted series, unscripted series, docuseries, documentaries, and features, end quote. The couple will provide content through a new company called Higher Ground Productions. The New York Times first reported in March that the Obamas were in advanced negotiations with Netflix to produce a series of shows, but it has now just officially become official.
I don't like it.
I don't either. It's making... It's honestly... For me, it's part of what we kind of use to discredit Donald Trump being president. They're leaning into it. Like, one of the big, like, easy to... There's a million reasons when we were fighting for him not to become president, for him not to. But one of the easiest, most universally graspable reasons was, like, he's a reality TV show star.
Yeah.
Like, this is stupid. Like, are you kidding me? And it was like, think about what the current president and his wife have done just by being the president and the first lady. And now that argument is just awash with this. Like,
yeah.
It's something like, oh, no, okay, everyone's just decided to give up and lean into that this is the way our society works now.
I think it cheapens the office. And I think it diminishes the two of them because, you know, I look at Jimmy Carter as probably the perfect template for a former president. You look at everything that... Because Jimmy Carter... I remember when Jimmy Carter was in the White House, and Americans really didn't like Jimmy Carter.
He was a peanut farmer.
I mean, Republicans never liked Jimmy Carter, but by the end of his 4 years in office, the Democrats didn't like Jimmy Carter either. Everybody thought the guy was ineffectual and depressing and too downbeat and too easily cowed to be any kind of a leader of this country. So we went out and we got Reagan, and, well, that's the kind of president that America likes.
Yay, jelly beans.
In the years since he left office, Jimmy Carter has been one of the most vital people on the global stage.
Oh, absolutely.
Bringing peace all over the world, bringing Habitat for Humanity all over the world, bringing economic advantages to people all over the world. And everybody loves Jimmy Carter, and they're like, oh, my God, this guy is the best.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, that's why I'm very disappointed in the Obamas, to be frank with you, because it's almost like when somebody gets a featured role in a really big movie, or like that's their big break in something in the entertainment industry. They can do one of many things with it. And like you're saying, Jimmy Carter was president. Maybe he wasn't everyone's favorite president, but he used that platform to do all of these awesome things, to do all of these wonderful things, to prove that he deserved to have that jumping off point.
Got peace between Israel and Egypt.
Like,
you got to give him credit for that.
Come on, man. And the Obamas are going to use what should be an amazing legacy to provide content for a streaming corporation?
There is a derogatory term that was popular in the 1980s that has kind of fallen out of use in recent years. FCC will not allow me to use the actual term, so we'll just call it star fornicators. And the Obamas really are star fornicators.
Yeah, remember when Jay-Z and Beyonce went to the White House?
This is it. It's like, ever since he got elected, it's, oh, I got all these celebrities coming into the White House and Hollywood loves me. And it's like, what? This is your legacy. This is what you're going to do.
This is what you want to leave behind. That's what bothers me about it. It's like, this is what you want to leave behind.
And the other side of it is, this enriches... I mean, look, every president goes off and does something to enrich themselves once they get out of office, okay? For the Clintons, it's, you know, speaking fees and the wildly corrupt...
Bill spoke at my brother's college graduation,
the
actually.
The wildly corrupt Clinton Foundation.
I still love them, though.
George Bush, I don't know what he's doing, but...
He also spoke at my brother's college graduation.
As a guy who ran with Dick Cheney, I'm pretty sure he's making a lot of money somewhere, okay? Dick Cheney didn't even wait until he got out of office. He just pulled all those levers while he was in office, watched the money roll into Blackwater, and then danced off into the sunset. I don't know if Bush is getting a piece of it or what, but George Bush is making money off of this somehow. But in the case of the Clintons and Jimmy Carter and whatever Bush is doing, there is at least some sense of presence in the global community and the idea that maybe somewhere somebody is doing something to benefit somebody else. This Netflix thing is entirely self-serving. This is a vanity project.
I was going to say, that's the thing, is that this has, it kind of, I don't want to say it discredits everything he did, but it comes close to proving correct those who were anti-Obama, because there were so many things that he did that I was like, he's totally doing this like for the good of the American people, for like to be a good president, to look out for us, to ABCDEFG. But this turns it into, oh no, he was just gearing up for his big debut.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's a very disturbing realization to come to.
As if television producer is somehow a step up from leader of the free world.
Like that's what I'm saying. It's like, really? It's supposed to go in the... It's like, I've been binge-watching Friends because I do that. But it's like when Joey becomes a waiter at the coffee shop they go to at Central Park after being a star on Days of Our Lives. And he's like, I was an actor. I can't be a waiter. It's supposed to go in the opposite direction. And, like, it's almost, like, Obama doing this almost gives me respect. I never thought I'd say this, but almost gives me respect for Donald Trump, because at least he stepped up.
Yeah, he went the other way around.
He went from reality star, don't look at me like that, Molly. He went from reality star to president.
Yeah.
That's still cheesy and terrible and gross, but it's better than going from president to reality star.
I suppose I suppose we should be thankful that...
The whole thing makes me sick. I have to keep chugging my Arnold Palmer.
I suppose we should be thankful that the Obamas didn't decide to become YouTubers. We can at least take solace in that.
Netflix is just rich people, YouTube.
Are they going to have Logan Paul on? I'll be
Stop
looking forward
it.
To that. In technology news, Tesla was in the crosshairs again this week after Consumer Reports denied the new Model 3 a recommendation. In testing two models, Consumer Reports found that the Tesla Model 3 had a longer braking distance than a Ford F-150 pickup. Testers were also unimpressed with its ride quality and wind noise at highway speeds and found the central touchscreen control system difficult to operate. Tesla CEO Elon Musk responded to the braking issue by promising that engineers are looking into it and that it might be fixable with a firmware update. This is a big deal because this is a new car.
And Tesla has been trying really hard to stay relevant this past
complete.
Few months.
Well, they're relevant because people...
I mean, they're relevant, but things have been kind of...
People have pre-ordered these things. There's a lot of interest in these things. But this is still a brand new car. And that Consumer Reports recommended status is everything for a car manufacturer. They all know this. Mm-hmm. You want to sell cars in the United States, you want that recommended note
that
from
has
Consumer
to be,
Reports.
It's like having an A from the health inspector.
And Consumer Reports, most of their criticism came down to, for a car that costs this much money, we expect more. And that had to do with the way it handled and the wind noise and things like that. The central control is a touchscreen that runs like everything in the car. And nobody's happy with the way any of those systems work right now. Mm-hmm. That's something you could almost overlook. The braking distance is a serious engineering problem because this is a small sedan going up against a half-ton pickup truck. And the half-ton pickup truck can brake quicker than the small sedan can. So, clearly, Tesla's goofed something up in this. That automatic braking system is entirely computer-controlled, so I have a feeling they're going to make some tweaks and find a way to fix that.
That, I feel like, is Tesla's MO. Like, we came up with this really, really cool thing. We have no idea how it works yet, and it's going to be a ridiculous process to watch us figure it out. But we came up with the cool thing. Isn't that cool? Like, that seems like their general... I mean, and don't get me wrong, Elon Musk is a genius and just cool dude. But still, there are some things that it's sometimes watching him work is like Doc Brown. It's like looking at Doc Brown and being like, the thing that you're talking about is absurd. You get that, right? Like the chances of you actually accomplishing this are like slim to none. And he's like, no, just listen. Just watch me try to do this. I might blow myself up, but I might actually accomplish it. Like, that's watching Elon Musk work.
His mom, by the way, they did a feature on her on CBS Sunday morning. She's over 70. She is still modeling.
Of course she is.
And I was reading a piece about Dolce & Gabbana yesterday, and she was in their most recent runway show. At their custom show down in New York.
Yes, I was going to say, I did read about that as well.
And she is stylish. She is
a
pretty nice looking lady. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. I am not the biggest fan of Elon Musk. I understand that a certain amount of hubris and swagger is necessary to keep the investors in line.
Well, that's the thing is that, like, I mean, most successful people I know are, word I can't say on the radio, but it's a product that women use to keep their private areas fresh.
Mm, yeah, comes in a bag.
Yeah, it comes in a bag.
With a nozzle.
And it has, yes. And that it, sometimes you call something the that nozzle yeah. instead of the that bag.
Yeah.
But there's always a level of just like everyone I know who's someone successful, or most people I know who are someone successful, you hear them talking, it's like so hard to not roll your eyes into the back of your head. And that's the way that Elon Musk is. You need a bit of that just unapologetic blank baggery to savvy people into thinking that you're worth their time, even though you're the worst.
On the plus side, Consumer Reports did say that the Model 3 had the greatest travel distance on a charge that they've seen in any electric car so far. So that's...
Well, that's something.
It's not a complete disaster, but the braking thing, that's a serious issue. You know, because people expect cars to handle a certain way, and the way this braking test works is they take the car up to 60 miles an hour and then slam on the brakes and see what the stopping distance is. Mm-hmm. The Tesla was coming in somewhere around 182 feet, which is a lot.
Yeah.
If you're in an F-150 and your braking distance is 182 feet, you are going to unleash 182 feet of carnage on everything in front of you because it is a giant F-150, yes. Okay?
I was going to say, I mean, the F-150, that's part of the principles behind their commercials,
yeah.
is being like, look how quickly we can stop.
I've driven an F-150 a lot, okay? That is a big, terrifying vehicle, all right? If you're in a sedan and you're not stopping for 180 feet, your car is getting smaller and smaller and smaller as the crumple zones contact everything around you. So this is definitely something they got to fix. I'm confident they'll be able to do it. There are a lot of people out there that just want to see Elon Musk eat it at this point.
That's, I mean, the higher up you rise, the more people want to see you fall.
I'm not one of those people. I would like to see this work. I would like to see electric
His
cars.
His mom is hot, too.
Yeah.
You are not messing around.
Oh, yeah. She's something.
Oh, my goodness.
I would like to see this work. I would like to see electric cars become viable because it's better for the environment. I think he's going to pull this off, but we'll see what happens. He's definitely going to go back to Consumer Reports and be like, please look at my car again.
You're like, come on, guys.
Please.
I really want this to work.
Which I keep, you know, someday I will learn how to run this radio station.
Fingers crossed, kids.
There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. Memorial Day is coming up, but the weather, yeah, not entirely cooperative.
Mm-mm.
Some of it's going to be good. Some of it, you're probably going to want to go see Deadpool. So here we go. Tonight, temperatures fall back into the upper 50s. Tomorrow, not much warmer than that. Temperatures only rising to about 62 degrees. Highs in the mid-50s tomorrow night. Might be a shower around here and there. Friday is going to be a winter. Friday is going to be a nice little summer preview. No rain in sight, mostly sunny skies, highs in the mid-80s,
yeah.
lows in the mid-60s Friday night. Saturday, another winter, partly cloudy skies, highs in the mid-80s once again. Look for some afternoon thunderstorms, showers, we get that at this time of year. Lows in the mid-50s Saturday night, and then the temperature doesn't go up much from there. Sunday and Monday both, we're looking at showers, mostly in the afternoon. High around 60 degrees, lows in the 50s Sunday night, lows around 60 Monday night, and that's going to kind of linger into Tuesday as well. So,
and then it's suddenly going to be winter again.
Not a complete washout for Memorial Day, but Saturday is definitely your big winner. Take advantage, plan ahead. It is WMFO Medford. When we come back, did you hear all of the other things that caught our attention? And coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, as always, on The Talent Mikey D, everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Stick around, rip the knob off the radio, tell your neighbors, it's WMFO.
Red light, stop. Green light, go. Every symbol has a meaning, even those symbols on the meat sold in your grocery store. I'm Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist, U.S. Department of Agriculture. The purple shield with the letters USDA and the word prime, choice, or good is your sign of quality. Quality that's been checked by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Prime means it's the top grade and usually the most expensive. Choice, the grade you'll see in most stores, is also very high in quality. If the meat has been graded for quality, you'll know that it has also passed a strict inspection for wholesomeness. You'll see the symbol for wholesomeness, a round purple inspection mark, on wholesale cuts of meat and packaged meat products. For more information on buying meat, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford 91.5. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary.
Hoorah.
And now, for a very special treat, we also have the lovely and illustrious Molly Gary with us as well.
Wow.
The better half of that whole. we're going to be here with you. I'm sorry, Derek, I had to. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock if you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. We love to hear from you, so pipe in if you feel the notion. And now for one of our favorite parts of the program called Did You Hear, where we quiz each other on the news events from the last week and make each other look stupid if we don't know them. So I am going to go with take a knee.
The NFL today made that illegal. Well, it's not illegal. What they said specifically is if you are an NFL player, you have a choice. You can go out on the field and stand up for the national anthem, or you can stay in the locker room and do whatever you want. You cannot go out on the field and kneel or sit during the national anthem, else your team will be fined. And your team will have the right to fine you as an individual player.
Can we talk about how much this goes against the Bill of Rights?
You have no First Amendment protection as a private employee.
Oh, I guess that's true.
That's true, I guess.
I want to say, I never even thought of it. Well, it's the same as how, like, I went to private school, so federal regulations in terms of, like, the amount of homework we got didn't apply.
Same thing. I went to private school, too. There was no MCAS either.
Why do my public school friends have 1 hour of homework and I have six? I'm very confused.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just gross.
I don't have a problem. I think this is a good compromise.
It is. I mean,
it's good middle ground.
Compromise being the operative word. It's annoying that it has to come down to, well, we're a super patriotic organization. So if you're not going to be super patriotic with us, you're going to have to hide somewhere while we're super patriotic.
No, that's not what's being said.
We'll still pay you your millions of dollars, though.
That's not what's being said.
What's being said.
What's being said is if you do not want to participate in the national anthem, if you do not want to take part in this ostentatious display of patriotism that we, for whatever reason, insist on having at the start of every game. And by the way, we play the national anthem before hockey games, basketball games, baseball games. Every sport in the United States does it. The NFL
every major event in the United States does it.
The NFL is the only league that has a problem with the kneeling. So basically what they're saying is, you don't want to participate, you don't have to. Go wait in the locker room.
Even baseball never had a problem with kneeling?
It's essentially putting up an ultimatum, because It's a matter of, like, during the national anthem, I don't know about anybody else who's watched any major sports game, but the team is standing there together. To say, if you don't want to stand up during the national